this collection of talent, I ask you, what more do you want from a TV show? You want experience? You want experience? I've appeared in over 40 major motion pictures.
I wrote Mean Girls.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
How about credentials? I was nominated for an Oscar.
I have an Emmy.
I have seen Star Wars 500 times.
How about colleagues? I've worked with Sir Anthony Hopkins, Annette Bening, and Jack Nicholson.
I have worked with Alec Baldwin and Tracy Morgan.
I'm personal friends with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
TheForce.net and RebelScum.com present The ForceCast. And now your hosts, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Hello, 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 and welcome. Welcome to another ForceCast, this week's show for November 17th, 2006. We are your weekly dose of Star Wars and the official podcast for TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. I am Jason, with me always my good buddy Pete.
Hello out there, everybody.
And welcome to another show. This show brought to you by our good friends at Official Picks. Officialpicks.com, that's picks with an X. We got a few special promotions we wanted to let you know about. First of all, with the holidays coming up, we do have a new coupon code that you can use over at Official Picks for all your purchases. You just type in OPX-holiday-savings. So that's a 15% discount to you on any purchase in the Official Picks store. Also, there is a new line of autographs called Behind the Scenes series. The first one is going to be autographed from none other than Industrial Light and Magic's own Don Beese. Of course, Don was the droid unit supervisor and the head R2-D2 operator in episodes 2 and 3, so make sure you check that out. Also, a new Luke and Leia dual signed photograph just in time for the holidays. Check out the new dual signed image of Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia, of course, autographed by Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill, respectively. So there you got it. Check them out. Officialpicks.com. That's picks with an X. Well, we should probably start off with a little recap of our Cinemax experience.
What an extravaganza that turned out to be.
The Cinemax HD experience was neither an experience nor HD. Discuss.
It was absolutely not HD. And in fact, took us back to the old VHS days.
Well, let me just try to sum it up as quickly as we can. I have been lost throughout this entire promotion in terms of just trying to decipher who was going to get this thing in HD. We thought we had it licked. We thought the response that we got, the clarification we got from Sansweet, was going to lock it up. It really didn't.
The eternal caveat of where available steps into play.
Where available. And I don't know about you. I'd love to get some email response on this. Send an email to us at podcast@theforce.net. In fact, we should probably do a probe droid poll over at Rebel Scum if you were able to see it in HD. Because you and I, we sit down, we're ready to do it. We got the food, everything's ready. And it comes on, and it's not HD. In fact, not only is it not HD, but it's a really poor, almost pan and scan quality transfer. And, you know, I've got a pretty nice TV, you know, and it looked awful. It was grainy. It was dark. I thought it was someone was pulling a prank on me.
It was absolutely horrible.
Yeah. We would have been.
But we sat there and watched it without. We could have popped in the DVDs and it would have been better. But you know what? We sat there and we watched it.
Yeah.
And
well, that just shows that we're stubborn.
Yes.
But I was very upset. So of course the whole time I'm fuming and I'm sitting there and I'm pounding on the computer trying to find who on earth gets Cinemax HD. I couldn't find it anywhere except for Comcast. I tried. We looked at Dish Network, we looked at Adelphia, we looked at DirecTV, of course Time Warner. I mean, those were the big ones we looked at. None of them carry Cinemax HD. And what's really funny is that the Cinemax homepage didn't even have a listing for Cinemax HD until, what, just a few days before the promotion actually kicked off, before they aired. So, you know, my thinking was that you had to have Cinemax HD in order to get the on-demand. But, you know, and I'm sure some of you are out there thinking, well, Jason, you're crazy because you have to have an HD station in order for it to be HD. That's not necessarily true because Pete, you and I talked about this. The History Channel will air documentaries, and it says in HD where available. And sure as heck, it's in HD. So it was a bust.
Who knows?
Rumors are stirring that this was not just a Cinemax deal, that parent company HBO is also going to get these films. Now, we don't know when. My suspicion is probably after the first of the year. I think HBO will probably do a big thing for the 30th anniversary. And I think they were throwing poor Cinemax a bone here. So I'll be dropping my Cinemax, going back to HBO, so I can get real, you know, actual high-definition cable again. But what a disappointment. And we still had a good time.
We did have a good time, although we do have to discuss the Skypecast adventure.
Well, we had the idea that maybe if folks dropped by the forums that we would invite them to a Skypecast so they could, we could just sit and chat. So I'm like, let's try this. Let's set up a Skype chat room. And what did we get?
Well, apparently the best pastime for Bulgarian teenagers is to get into other people's Skype chats and start swearing at them and telling them to do inappropriate things with themselves and their mothers. And, you know, we got on there and we're listening to this and going, wait, what's going on? Do you speak English? And they just started swearing at us.
Yes, I speak English. Do this to yourself. I mean,
all of a sudden we're talking to Borat and he's telling us to do all the things that we don't want to do.
Well, there is this really nice girl from Bulgaria who came on and she was kind of embarrassed. She goes, yeah, this is kind of a thing that a lot of my friends do. They jump on these things. So,
and she's running down the list going, they're from Bulgaria, they're from Bulgaria, they're from Bulgaria.
It was very odd.
It was very, very strange. You know, and it's the middle of the afternoon here. I don't know what hour it was in Bulgaria, but it was extraordinary, unusual, and it didn't take us very long to go, yeah, let's just forget about this.
Yeah, we tried for a while, like muting them, and it didn't work out.
But in the future, I believe it'll be by invite only. Yeah,
I think so. But at any rate, speaking of the Cinemax, I do want to hit on this. We've gotten some email about where is the Coldplay Fix You video that was on iTunes. We covered it, I think last week we talked about it, and then it's been on the site. Well, I looked today because we've been getting these emails. Where is it? Where is it? We want to see it. And it has been taken down. It's been removed. There is still a Cinemax HD podcast in the iTunes store with some free videos from the Star Wars in 30 Minutes guy. But that's it. The Coldplay video has been taken down. So my hunch is there's been some issues with using that song for this purpose and distributing it on the internet for free. Because you're essentially giving the song away for free in the process. So I think that's where the glitch was. If you missed it, sorry, I don't think it's available, but I'm sure I know YouTube's got it, so you'll be able to catch it. Also, we wanted to follow up on a story that applies to only 2% of our audience, but there is a coupon code if you're interested in the 2004 Lucas Merlot wine selection from Francis Ford Coppola Presents. It is BACTA10. So if you're looking for that special hard to buy for a person that may be a wine aficionado, you can get them some Lucas Merlot. And if you use the customer code BACTA10, you'll get a little discount. So check that out if you're so inclined. We'll have the link to that on our show notes. Also some charity information here. The Pennsylvania Star Wars Collecting Society has announced their fourth annual charity toy drive to benefit Garrison Corita of the 501st Legion. And apparently what they do is they collect all these toys, and then Corita then distributes them to the various local children's hospitals and whatnot, dressed in the full armor. So what a cool thing. And what I'm thinking about doing is, as you all know, I buy my figures by the case and I get some doubles. And I'm thinking of sending all my doubles to this. I think it's a really cool cause.
Well, I don't think there's anything better than having a toy delivered by Darth Vader. Well, with the exception of Santa Claus, of course. But if you're a Star Wars fan, then Darth Vader is either 1A or number 2.
Right, right. So you want to check that out. Well, again, we'll have the link on our show notes. This is, the Pennsylvania Star Wars Collecting Society doing this. And there's also a website, garrisoncarita.com. So you can check out all the details there. It's a really cool cause. So be on the lookout. Oh, yes. It's that time again. Celebration 4 on the way. And we are counting down the weeks for you and giving you some tips. What do we got, Pete?
Well, we are 27 weeks out. And again, like I've said, it's going to come up on you quick. So if you're thinking, now, I'll do it later, I'll do it later. Nope. Jump on it right now because you want to get your tickets, you want to get your hotel, you want to get everything in place so that all you have to do is go and enjoy. And in order to enjoy a little bit better, our tip this week, bring a water bottle. Stick that in the backpack we told you about last week or 2 weeks ago, and make sure you've got, you know, even some Gatorade or something like that, something to replenish you while you're waiting in line. You know, you may not want to leave your place in line if you've been waiting all morning, and we'll talk about that on our special show that will be coming up for Celebration 4. But
oh, you let a cat out of the bag there.
Darn it.
Yeah, we don't want people to know that we're putting together a sort of complete three-hour-plus extravaganza survival guide for Celebration 4. Did I say that?
You heard it right here, folks.
Anyway, there's your tip. 27 weeks till Celebration 4. It's a celebration. I love that music.
You can't help but dance.
You can't help but. It's cool in the gang. Come on.
Chair dance, but dance nonetheless.
And we wanted to extend some best wishes to Stephen Hayford, a longtime contributor to Rebel Scum and a good friend to a lot of the members of our team here. And apparently he had some pretty serious heart surgery last week. And so we're wishing him all the best for a speedy recovery. So if you're listening, Steve, the best to you. And some congratulations to Star Wars Panama. The official FanForce chapter of Panama is celebrating their achievements. The latest, their homepage has been nominated for the prestigious Arroba de Oro, the Golden At Award, one of the most recognized web design prizes in Latin America. So our own FanForce chapter in Panama getting some kudos for their web design. So we'll have a link to that site also. I think that's about it. Did we miss anything?
I think that's it. I'm impressed with your Spanish, by the way.
Let's punch it.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
Well, you've been hearing about it a lot on this show. We had Kyle Newman, the director of Fanboys, in our cantina for a number of weeks, and it's official now. We have a trailer. So if you haven't seen it yet, check it out at iesb.net. Pete and I, we both viewed it, and it was definitely worth the wait. This is going to be one heck of an experience for Star Wars fans.
It was exactly what I was thinking it was going to be, and just like Kyle said, it does scream Star Wars in every scene, but it does look like there's definitely a larger theme to it, but there were some great moments, some very funny moments, just in the trailer alone, so.
Yeah, we don't want to spoil it for you. I had even thought about using it as our bumper for our intro this week, some of the clips, but we'll wait until it's been out there long enough before we start throwing clips up, and definitely check it out. It's at iesb.net, the official trailer for the Fanboys movie. And we also have some links to catch our previous episodes if you want to be caught up to speed with our fantastic interview. Well, I don't say that to brag. I guess what I mean is a great interview because we had such an incredible guest in Kyle Newman. We really appreciate that.
I kind of wish we would have had this beforehand so I could ask him so many more questions that popped up into my head after watching the trailer.
Oh, me too. Well, actually, I think we're going to get him back. I think that he will come back. He said that he would when we get closer to the release date of the film, so we're going to take him up on that for sure.
Absolutely. And in case you missed it, screenwriter Frank Darabont has blasted George Lucas for the delays behind the Indiana Jones movie. The highly anticipated sequel was ready for filming back in 2004, but despite a script from Darabont that impressed director Steven Spielberg, the film's producer Lucas blocked the impending shoot, citing problems with the screenplay. Now, this story is obviously he's very frustrated with George Lucas for, you know, knocking down his life's work, or, well, not his life's work, but his
2 years his hard work. Two years he worked on this.
But it's it makes me laugh only because it's a very Lucas thing. You know, this is the quote from Darabont as to what happened. He said, Lucas read it and said, yeah, I don't think so. I don't like it. You know, and it was just like, I could very much see him saying that. You know, just being sitting in a meeting and, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
So
you can picture Harrison Ford. He's like, George, I like the script a lot. And then you got Spielberg, who's really, yeah, George, you got to read this script. And he's like, no, I don't like it. I don't think so.
So
bring in the double.
We know we've got probably a little bit more time before he finds a script that he really likes. But at least they're continuing to work on it. And maybe this is the pressure that George needs in order to move forward on it.
You know what I kind of like about George is the fact for... As much heat as this guy has taken on his screenplays for the prequel films, that he tells the writer of Shawshank Redemption and The Green Mile, I don't think so. And we mentioned earlier about the Star Wars and iTunes connection. Something else you don't see on iTunes right now, of course, is the Star Wars films available in their movie store. But will we see it? Well... Analysts are saying that it's possible, and there's been some quotes in the news recently and a story over at CNNmoney.com stating that News Corp and Apple were having, quote, positive talks, but that several details still needed to be worked out. Now, some of Fox's television properties are available on iTunes, like 24 and Prison Break, but right now, no films. And, of course, the big million-dollar question is, once they do, you know, once the deal has been made between the two, will Star Wars be a part of that? And I have to say, yes, I believe it will, only because we have read a number of quotes from George, and he is a huge fan of the idea of legal downloading of entertainment. He sees that as the real future of not only films in general, but particularly high definition.
Certainly, and I think we're on the cusp of what's going to become the next big thing, which is... Our generation and the generations behind us that are more technologically in tune are going to be watching their TV shows on their morning commutes or their commutes home, and, you know, riding the train, flying in a plane. Those things are going to be done, you know,
the fact of the matter is a little pocket sized player. And the fact of the matter is, actually, you know what? I'm going to do one better on you. I think that it's not going to be just the pocket sized player. These glasses, I don't know if you've seen them, that you actually put on, and it creates the idea or the picture of a large screen that you're looking at.
I have not seen that.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet. They're very expensive, but, you know, the day's going to come where they're going to be $50, you know. But what I have to say about this is, I don't know if you saw the story also about Microsoft and the Xbox 360. They're offering, and they really, this is a big story, and you don't see a lot of coverage on this. In all the talk about the Zune overtaking the iPod, one thing that they've missed is Microsoft made a huge leap over top of Apple with this announcement that they're going to offer HD television and HD films for download on the 360. That's huge. And Lucas has said in previous interviews, like we've mentioned, that he believes that that's the future of HD. None of this Blu-ray and HD crap. The future is just a straightforward HD download that you get. And I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see Star Wars in HD come into an Xbox 360 before we see it come into the iPod.
Or Cinemax. Well, a lot of us have thought about what it would be like to go back in time and watch the Star Wars films in their proper order or their chronological order without having been imprinted by all the media over the last 30 years. Well, Entertainment Weekly took that challenge. They put it out to writer Michael Morrison, who was a quote-unquote Star Wars virgin, and had him sit down and watch all six films in succession without ever having seen them before. Now, if you go over to Entertainment Weekly or check out our show notes, you'll see the full article, and it's worth a read because there's definitely some insight there. I expected this to be fairly negative, only because people who haven't seen Star Wars to this point are avoiding it for a reason. They either have some preconceived notions, or, you know, it, you would just assume that at some point the desire to, you know, you see that Revenge of the Sith made umpteen billion dollars, and you go, I wonder if it's worth going to see.
Isn't that like you in Titanic, though?
Yeah, but I watched Titanic.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were still holding out.
But I did. I was holding out, and I was taking this vicious stance on it because, hey, I know how it ends.
You thought it was a cult.
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, but this article, you know, even though there are some critical elements to it, what he does talk about is there's no denying that he got sucked into the world, that there is so much magic and wonderment in the Star Wars galaxy and the things that Lucas created, that it's just absolutely, it's compelling beyond just most movies and most franchise properties. And one thing that he did talk about is, as you're going through and you're watching the films, you see the big differences that maybe we don't see because we know the film so well, like how there are so many huge worlds that they visit in the first three movies. But when you go back to the original trilogy, it's they're on a desert, they're in a forest, you know, all the planets are similar.
Pretty basic.
Because they were limited to that at the time. And we don't really see that because we just see the planets.
Right, right.
And we always see what Coruscant looks like in our head anyway. Mm-hmm. But you don't get that as much when you're going back. And the same thing with the special effects, although he was very complimentary on what Lucas was able to do with the original films, which, you know, still hold up today.
Yeah, he said that was almost more impressive to him than the prequels, was the fact that what he was able to do, you know, 30 years ago in some cases. I also like that he pointed out just how seamlessly 3 and 4 move into each other. And I thought that was cool that he pointed that out. It is definitely worth reading this column. And I've checked out his blog, and he's a pretty insightful entertainment writer. Got a great sense of humor and real down to earth. And he has a cool YouTube video on his blog right now with a great lightsaber battle.
For an amateur lightsaber battle, it's probably the best one I've seen.
And now, part two of our interview with Star Wars author Drew Karpyshyn.
Where are you going, Master? For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Drew, were you surprised at the success of Knights of the Old Republic?
It's funny, because when you develop a game, it's very hard to get a sense of what it's going to end up as. You go through so much of a long iterative process that there's times when you're playing the game and you're going, wow, this is horrible, it's terrible. But that's because it's not finished, and you tend to forget that because you're so immersed in it. So for a long time, you know, there was a lot of concern on the project that, you know, were we doing the right thing? And it was right around Christmas before it was released, which, you know, and I'm terrible with, I can't remember if it was Christmas 2003 and it came out shortly after that, like in the spring, or if it was the year after. I think it would have been Christmas 2002, so just before 2003, where everything was kind of in. The combat was in, the voiceover was in, the sound effects were in, and we were playing it over Christmas, you know, bug checking, bug fixing. And that's when I realized, this game is fun. This is a really, really fun game that feels like Star Wars. I feel like I'm in a Star Wars world when I play this game. And at that moment, I thought, you know, you can't go wrong if you can accomplish that. And that's kind of when I knew it was going to be a big hit. And you know, fortunately, it turned out to be one of our biggest games. You know, I don't know, I don't know if it is our absolute biggest, but I think it might be.
Yeah. I know in terms of Star Wars gaming, it was enormously successful, and it spawned a sequel, and has also spawned a novel. You are now a novelist.
That's right, yes.
So tell us how the Darth Bane book came about, and why it was decided to flesh out this character and actually bring him into the world of the novels.
Well, I think, you know, as you said, Knights of the Republic was a huge success. It really opened up the Old Republic era to a lot of fans who weren't familiar with it. And I think because there was nothing in the Old Republic era, there was a real demand from fans to see something else in that era, you know. We did have, as you said, a sequel to the game, but they wanted more. You know, the movies, they obviously had, you know, big they already had the plans in place, so I don't think there was the idea to make a movie in the Old Republic. But they did want to do a novel. And I approached LucasArts shortly after the game came out, once it started getting good reviews. And I mentioned to Shelley Shapiro, who is my editor over at LucasArts and Del Rey, they kind of work together on the Star Wars books, that you know, I was interested in doing a novel for Star Wars set in the Old Republic. And I had done some novels for a company called Wizards of the Coast, some Forgotten Realms novels. So I did have some experience writing novels. I did have, obviously, experience with the Old Republic because of my work on the video game as lead writer. And after about a year, when they kind of, you know, figured out what they wanted to do exactly, they came back to me and said, you know what, we think a novel would be a good idea. Then we decided, you know, where in the Old Republic do we want to set it? And we kind of thought that between the comics, the Dark Horse comics on Exarchun and that era, and the Star Wars, the Knights of the Old Republic game and KOTOR 2, that time period had kind of been explored. And we wanted to go with something that wasn't quite as explored by other sources. And that's when we kind of hit on the idea of using Darth Bane as a character, who was, as some, and I'm sure many of your listeners know, was introduced in the, I believe, in the Dark Horse comic series. I think that was his first mention, actually, in any kind of public setting. And he was just such an intriguing figure. He's such a pivotal figure that it seemed to make sense to do a novel that would, you know, bring more of this figure to light and just explore him in depth. So that's kind of the process where we ended up coming around to Darth Bane.
Now, kind of talk about that a little bit, because the book does mirror the Jedi versus Sith comic book, graphic novel from Dark Horse. Talk about the different process as opposed to starting with a blank slate for a character and fleshing that out, as opposed to this, where you were diving into a more specific part of a certain character that plays a big part in this other grand scheme.
Yeah, there's definite advantages and disadvantages to doing something like that. You know, one of the biggest advantages is you kind of have a jumping off point. You know, there's something to build on. You know, there's that initial impression for people who've read the Dark Horse comics,
mm-hmm.
And you want to be true to that, to the spirit of your original source. You know, so it does give you a little bit of focus. It does help you sort of wrap your head around it, because if you're told to just, you know, write a novel about Star Wars and that's it, it's such a broad universe, you can almost be, you know, paralyzed by the sheer amount of options you have. So that's one nice thing about the, you know, using a character who sort of has some anchor. We chose Bane because he definitely seemed like a, you know, he's a very important character in the comics, but he's always kind of, he's almost like a shadow or this sort of ghostly figure who kind of pops in and pops out at key times, and it's very clear there's a lot of background that's happened, but it's not, it's only alluded to in the comics. It's never fully explained or fleshed out, and I found that very intriguing, so I thought, you know, this is something as a fan I want to know more about. So as I've talked about earlier, that tells me other fans want to know about this. So, you know, that's kind of why I think it's good to have that as a starting point. Now, disadvantages, obviously, as I said, you want to be true to the spirit of the original source, but, you know, a comic book is very different from a novel, and there's certain things that were done in the comics, artistic choices, various things like that, that I just felt didn't work for the novel, for telling the story I wanted to tell. So you have to walk this delicate balance where you keep the key elements in there, but you have to tell them in a way that's true to the story you want to tell. You know, anyone who kind of writes fiction kind of knows truth is really relative when all's said and done. And unfortunately, sometimes that can upset, you know, fans of an original source. I have had people, you know, take me to task on board on the various message boards and that because,
the Star Wars fans are very passionate.
And I mean, that's what's so great about Star Wars, you know. So I've had things where people say, you know, well, that character was killed by a bow and arrow as opposed to a blaster. You know, for me, I understand, yes, they're right. They're technically right. But for me, he is the character died. Right? And, you know, I understand in the, you know, the comic they were going for a certain visual style where it made sense, you know, for the bow and arrow But in the novel, I would have had to then explain that to people who hadn't read the comics, and it would have distracted them from the point I was trying to make, which was the impact of this character's death on other characters. So, you know, you kind of have to walk the line. And I think most people understand it. You know, most people aren't going to, you know, overreact. But people are so passionate about Star Wars that, you know, you're always going to always have some people who say, you know, I wish you hadn't done that. And, I mean, they're entitled to their opinion. I just have to hope that on the end, you know, the enjoyment they get out of the book offsets anything that they might find, you know, mildly annoying or you know, that they don't feel quite fits exactly with the original.
As an artist, Drew, how explain the differences in satisfaction you get from a video game, writing a video game, as opposed to writing a novel. Is there a difference when they're both successful? Does it feel the same, or is there just a kind of a different vibe?
You know, it is a very different vibe. There's a couple, you know, key differences. One is that with the novel, it's a bit more personal because I'm the only one who did any writing on it. So it is kind of me, and it's my, you know, I'm sinking or swimming on my own merits alone. It's out there, and I've sort of, you know, laid myself bare, and what people think of it is, you know, there's nowhere to hide. You know, I can't say, well, that was somebody else's fault. With a game, it's a team environment. So there's good and bad to that, but I think the good definitely outweighs the bad, is that you feel this real sense of community and accomplishment as a group when you're done. And when you look at it, you see all the things everyone else on the project brought to it that made your stuff better. You know, I think we've put a very good story into Knights of the Old Republic, but without the great graphics and, you know, the amazing gameplay, you know, without all those elements coming together, the story wouldn't have had as much power and impact. You know, the big revelation scene required work from, you know, our cinematic team and our programmers and our artists and our writers, and we all worked together to make what I think is just an amazing moment when, you know, people's jaw will drop. And when I saw that in the game, I realized it was more than it would have been just working on it myself. So there's kind of this weird, you know, trade-off. I don't know how to get the best of both worlds. Maybe a collaboration on the novel would accomplish it. You know, on the other hand, I'm involved in both, you know, both worlds anyway, so I kind of get the satisfaction from one satisfaction from the novels and one from the games, and I can enjoy them both.
When you're so imprinted, I mean, you said that you approach both these projects as a fan. When you're so imprinted by the images and the storylines of the films, is it difficult to tell a Star Wars story without the movie characters?
You know, I don't think it is, because for anyone who's familiar with the expanded universe, they realize that Star Wars is a living universe, and you don't need the movie characters to explore what goes on there. I mean, the movies do a good job of sort of taking these universal human emotions and you know, portraying them on the screen. But because they are universal, you realize, you know, that the dark side can appeal to any Jedi. You know, it's a threat to every Jedi. It's not just something that only Anakin or Luke, you know, felt the pull of. It's a universal experience. So I think once you understand that, you do kind of realize you don't need the movie characters. I think the bigger concern is you want to make sure that what you put in there isn't just a pale imitation of the movie characters. You want to tap into that, as I said, that iconic status of them or the feel or the spirit, but still present something that feels fresh and unique and different, because you don't want fans to shrug their shoulders and say, eh, I've heard it before, you know. So
when it comes to a concept like the Force, and you are creating these characters and further developing these characters, what's some of the best resources for furthering the philosophy, the Jedi religion, the philosophy? Is some of the things that you drew on your own personal beliefs, or were you really putting yourself into that universe?
Well, I think for me, it's more about putting yourself into the universe and trying to understand what someone in that world would think about these philosophies or now, I'm not going to use the word religion, but these philosophies,
right,
or beliefs. You know, a good example is what we did with the Sith philosophy in Knights of the Old Republic, which was a heavy basis for where I started in the novel, in the Darth Bane novel. We took, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, it's all about evil and the dark side. But if you really think about it, nobody wants to be evil. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, yeah, I'm gonna be evil. You have to figure out why it would be logical for someone to take this path. Why they would see merit in it, and why they would see, you know, an appeal to it. Something beyond, you know, just simple greed or nastiness, because I don't think those are very intriguing.
Right.
And once you kind of put yourself into the mindset of someone in that world, and maybe this is where my experience as, you know, a role-playing gamer of computer games and pen and paper role-playing helps me, is you put yourself in the mind of that character and just try to say, well, realistically, what would I want to see? How would the dark side lure me in? What could they tell me that I would say, yes, that makes sense, I understand that? And, you know, we did a lot of work on Knights of the Old Republic to come up with a Sith philosophy that is, on some level, logical and appealing. It's sort of only when you start digging down you realize, you know, this has the potential to very quickly become something evil. You know, in theory it's good, but in practice it tends to, well, to lead you down the dark side.
So where are we headed, Drew, in terms of your involvement, the future of your involvement with the Star Wars property and the Star Wars franchise? Any projects coming down the line that you're aware of?
Well, there's nothing right now in the pipeline. I mean, I know a lot of people are, you know, clamoring for Knights of the Republic 3, but I hate to be the bearer of bad news. It's not on the table right now. And I also haven't, you know, I don't have any current contracts for any more books or anything like that yet. And I think, I hope that Lucas was kind of trying to, LucasArts was trying to test the waters and see, you know, how much interest is there in the Old Republic. You know, they've done a very good job of giving my novel every chance to succeed, making sure it's out there to a wide audience, making sure it's well promoted. And I think the fan reaction has been, you know, pretty positive. The sales seem to be going well. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for a couple of weeks. So I'm thinking that, you know, the reaction will lead them to do more novels set in the Old Republic. And I'm hoping they will approach me to do them. You know, as of yet, haven't heard anything. But, you know, if people like it, you know, tell their friends, get them to buy a book. The more it sells, the more chance I'll be able to do another project.
When we were at Celebration 3 a couple years ago, there was a Q&A with George Lucas, of course, and the question was brought up about, even though he said, you know, no more films, the question was asked, well, what about, you know, in some of these other timelines, like Knights of the Old Republic? And there was a huge, thunderous applause for that. And, you know, as they start making this leap into television, there's going to be a cartoon, obviously, a live-action series, and there's always potential. If you look at other sci-fi properties right now, there's spin-off series. What do you think about a possible Knights of the Old Republic era, either cartoon or, even better, live-action series?
You know, I think something like that would be amazing, because there's definitely stories still to tell in that era. You know, and obviously I would like to be, you know, a part of it if possible, but just as a fan, I think, you know, I want to see more about this. You know, and the Old Republic itself is such a huge range. You know, you have the stuff around the KOTOR era, you have the stuff around, you know, the Darth Bane novel, which is set, you know, much later than the Knights of the Old Republic games. You have everything in between. You can go even farther back to the origins of you know, the first schism between the Jedi, you know, that eventually led to the Sith Empire that was, I think, again, mentioned in another, shown in another Dark Horse comic series. You know, there's so much out there as a fan that I want to see. You know, I have to believe other fans want to see it, too. And, you know, the idea that, as you said, you know, they might want to do a cartoon series or a live-action series, something like that, I find it very exciting, and not just because I hope to, you know, work on it. Obviously, if they ask, if they're listening, hey, give me a call, I'll be there. You know? But Just as a fan, I would love to see something like that.
Great. Well, Drew, we've got a few more questions. I'm going to turn it over to Pete. This is sort of a tradition here in the Cantina, and we ask all our guests a series of questions, kind of similar to Inside the Actor's Studio, but this is Inside the Actor's Studio, the Star Wars version. And this was a great questionnaire created by Yoda of Dagobah. And Pete, take it away.
Okay, Drew, what is your favorite Star Wars line?
My favorite Star Wars line? Oh, wow. Okay. You know, I think I'm going to have to go with an old standby and, you know, these are not the droids you're looking for. I just love that moment.
Absolutely. What is your least favorite Star Wars line?
Least favorite? Wow, that's tough.
Well, and you can always take the easy way out of, well, I liked them all.
Yeah, well, you know, I liked them all. If I knew the last line of the last movie, I would say that because that meant it was over, but that's a cop-out.
Very good answer. What Star Wars moment makes you smile?
Makes me smile. Well, you know, this is going to sound a little bit twisted, but I love the scene where I'm a Darth Vader fan. I like the dark side. I love the scene where Han Solo comes in on the Cloud City and shoots a laser at him, and he, you know, blocks it and pulls the laser out of his hand because it just shows you how powerful Darth Vader was. It just blows my mind. So,
what Star Wars moment makes you sad?
Well, you know, I actually, again, you know, I guess I'm the champion of the dark side lately, so, you know, maybe in this way, but in some way it makes me sad that the Emperor got a little bit too careless and let Vader take him down, you know? There's a reason the rule of two was put into place. You have, you know, you're focusing on Luke when you should be focusing on Vader lying right beside you, and the Emperor, you know, he went down when I think, you know, he let his guard down for a second, and it hurt him. And I kind of was like, you know, oh, yeah. You were the champion of the dark side. You slipped. What are you doing?
Who is your favorite Star Wars character?
Well, that's a given. That's Darth Vader. Actually. Well, sorry, pardon me. Darth Bane.
Well, we'll
from
go.
From the movies, Darth Vader.
Right, absolutely. EU, it's Darth Bane, definitely.
Yeah.
Who is your least favorite Star Wars character?
Oh, boy, there's, you know, not to pick on anyone, but, you know, C-3PO, he never quite worked for me. I always thought, you know, he's always seems to be causing more trouble than he's worth, so I always wanted to kind of have him be, you know, removed.
That's two votes for C-3PO, by the way. That this is our second mention of him, so I think he's kind of that cult character that everybody loves to hate.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Star Wars curse word?
My favorite Star Wars curse word.
And you can use any that you used in your novel or anything along those lines.
Well, the one thing you use in the novel, and I'm not sure exactly what the difference is that I've seen kiffing and criffing, and I've always found it interesting that R, kiffing and criffing, was it a typo somewhere along the way, or is there a difference? So I've always found it intriguing. Is it this weird etymology someone's worked on, or is it just coincidence? So.
Okay, what job would you like to have in the Star Wars universe?
In the Star Wars universe? Well, I don't think I would have made a good fighter pilot. You know, I actually wouldn't have minded being, you know, one of the Jawas out there collecting droids. It's like a decent way to go until the Empire hits your sandcrawler. But
what job would you not want to do in the Star Wars universe?
All right, well, we'll go back to fighter pilot. You know, it looks really uncomfortable in those cockpits, and I don't think, you know, I think they have to, you know, have a little bag so they can go to the bathroom in their outfit. I don't think they can easily change out of them. It just doesn't look fun.
Okay, and our last question, if another Star Wars movie was to be made and you were cast in it, what would you like to hear George Lucas say when he says cut on the last scene?
Cut on my last scene? You know, I'd love for him to turn to me and say, Drew, the Force really is with you.
Drew Karpyshyn, thank you so much for joining us in the Cantina this week.
Thanks very much, guys.
Hey, what are you trying to push on us?
A fine addition to my collection.
He's worth a lot to me.
And in collecting news, Hasbro we'll start with. Of course, we're now into the last throes of the Fans' Choice Showdown. We've got the Elite Eight up as this show goes live. And we went to our own Dan Curto for all the details and some new exciting announcements. So we're here with Dan Curto, and Dan's been hard at work on the Greatest Hits 2007, but I'm going to stop right there.
It's not that anymore.
That's right. I'm going to stop right there and say, Dan, what is it now officially?
Okay, the official name of the line will be Saga Legends, which refers to the entire saga of Star Wars, all six movies, and Legends, meaning the past figures that the fans have voted to come back.
Very
cool. The exciting
cool.
part about this is that there will be eight figures in the line dubbed Saga Legends Fans' Choice.
Yeah, so those top eight, is that what we're seeing right now then?
No.
Oh.
This has been the subject of some confusion the past couple of days for me. The eight figures we see right now, the Elite Eight, the winners from this week will be included. So the final four that are being determined this week will definitely be a lock for the line.
So
but now we don't know. I mean, anything could change. There are certain characters that have pulled ahead. I mean, obviously, the Biker Scout is very popular. The Imperial Officers, the fact that you can get a running change and get all three variations, very popular. The bonus Pit Droids, they have their followers because those are figures that were only available overseas. They're never available in the U.S. A lot of fans, they want to get those. You know, the Dark Trooper has his fans. The Coruscant Clone Commander has his fans. Sand Trooper, R4, I-9, TC-14, all of them. I mean, they've done all very well in the tournament so far.
And the interesting thing, Dan, is that they all are part of, I don't know, what would you call them? I mean, I would call them kind of army builder type figures. I would even consider some of the droids. I mean, where collectors are trying to amass a large selection of all of these different designs. I mean, they all seem to kind of fit that category.
Right. I think the voting from the fans has been in a couple of different camps. The one you mentioned, army builders, of course. That's why we saw so many clone troopers in the beginning rounds. Also, droids. Everybody loves the droids. We're seeing a lot of support for them. The other camp that I'm sort of a part of myself is figures that were really hard to get, whether they were part of an exclusive, whether they were available overseas, like the Pit Droids I mentioned earlier, or just they were packed in with like a vehicle or a battle pack or something like that, and now we're getting a chance to see them on a single card. And it's funny, I'm happy that people are into that, because that was one of the things that I requested when I was approached to set up this whole thing. Originally, Hasbro just wanted to do strictly the carded figures from the past, and I came to them and said, hey, if we're going to do this, why not open it up to every figure, regardless of how it came out, regardless of, you know, whatever rarity or you know, whatever it is. And they said, you know what, let's do that. Let's see what people really want.
Well, that certainly made the contest a lot more interesting for me too, because there were some of the vehicles that I missed out on, and some of the multi packs that I missed out on, just, you know, budgetary constraints here and there, and
right.
so, you know, my priority has always been the carded figures. So this was kind of an opportunity for me to see some of these come through the contest, and unfortunately, a lot of them go through the contest. But nonetheless,
yeah.
I mean, hey, it's democracy, and we've got to trust democracy, right?
Well, I don't know about that. we're seeing a lot of different opinions on you know, the figures that are left. The whole idea of doing the tournament in the first place, they don't want to vote for popular characters against popular characters. Well, that is a point, isn't it?
I suppose, yeah.
You know, you're not really. I mean, if you say, you know, I want to pick a Boba Fett and throw him up against a Jawa, well, who do you think is really going to win? Have a really popular character against a crappy character, the question's not in doubt at all.
Well, I think you try to vote not based on a character you like, but on a sculpt and a figure that you're willing to plunk, you know, $6 for.
Yeah, ideally that would have been great. I don't think that happened.
Well, maybe not.
Personally, if it were up to me, there's several figures that I would have picked that nobody else voted on just because I thought they were great sculpts or, you know, good articulation, good representations of that particular character. They didn't make it anywhere near the finals. Everybody went for troops. Everybody went for hard-to-find figures, you know.
Right.
And so, you know what? That's what Hasbro wanted to know. That's what they found out.
So what we know for sure is that the top four will show up as part of Saga Legends in 07, and these will be these will be Saga Legends fan choice.
Correct.
And this is going to be part of a collection of figures that's going to span, I forget, how many did you say, Dan, total?
There's, well, last time I believe it was 20 to 24 figures altogether.
Okay.
Now, this is another thing to keep in mind. A lot of these figures are already in production. I mean, they're coming out in March. You have to jump on it pretty quick.
Sure.
So what they're doing is really waiting until the very last minute to see which figures the fans want. So that's why we're getting the final four as definite locks. Now, you might do the math and say, well, gee, if there's eight figures and we didn't get the final four, who are the other four? Some of those other four were already picked from Phase 1 voting, which, if you recall, was in the Rebel Scum forums.
Right.
Okay. Now, I'm not going to tell you who they are. You'll have to wait and see.
I can't pry it out of you?
No. But I can tell you this, and this could be a little scoop for you. When we get down, and it won't be for another couple of weeks, but when we get down to the number one figure in this entire tournament, that figure will be marked on the card as being Fans' Choice number one. Now, that's never been revealed anywhere yet.
That's very cool.
So it kind of makes the voting a lot more worthwhile, and a lot of people are kind of like, well, gee, once this week is over, why do I have to vote anymore? Of course, people have opinions that vary from one person to the next, and that's part of what the forum debates, you know. That's kind of fun for me, too, is to see what other people are saying.
Right.
And I try to answer as many questions as I can, but keep in mind I don't want to reveal everything right in the beginning, because then why would you come back?
Now Hasbro's not going to put a Rebel Scum logo on that number one figure, are they?
No. That would be cool.
Or maybe,
that has been discussed.
Or maybe if it's a trooper, they could take the helmet off and it could be Dan Curto underneath.
Yeah, the Dan Curto figure. That would be funny. I actually did make myself as a figure a few years ago, and it was the world's first fat Jedi. I'm happy to say I'm no longer as fat, although I'm a lot more balder. So it's not exactly an accurate custom anymore.
Oh, so Dan, so we've got how many more weeks of this?
Well, let's see. Final four will be determined this week. So then next week we'll be down to two, and then the week after that will be the overall winner. So another two weeks by the time this airs.
So will you check in with us next week and tell us where we are at that point?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks so much, Dan Curto. We really appreciate it. Make sure you get over there to rebelscum.com and vote for the number one fan choice figure for the Saga Legends line in 2007. Thanks a lot, Dan. So there you go. You got Saga Legends.
Fans' Choice number one. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. That is cool. I still think they should put the Rebel Scum logo on it, though. And continuing with the Hasbro theme, you might be wondering, well, what's next for the Saga collection? We know we've got the Saga Legends coming out next year. We've got, of course, the 30th anniversary. Oh, well, speaking of 30th anniversary, if you've picked up the most recent Dark Horse Comics, you might see an ad in the pages. That's pretty cool. It's actually advertising the 30th anniversary collection coins, and it has one of the clone troopers actually hoisting one of the coins up over his head. So it's a cool ad. So you might want to be looking for that. But there's still plenty of figures coming out for this year, including some. We've got some new photos of the Saga line figures number 63, 67, and 69. Be the holographic Obi-Wan Kenobi. The Padme Amidala before she gets her shirt ripped, and the Yariel Poof. Now, these are all pretty much repacks and retools, but nonetheless, all three of them look pretty good. I like the holographic Obi-Wan. It's based on the Obi-Wan number 55 figure from Episode 3, which is the pilot Obi-Wan. So they probably couldn't have chosen a better sculpt in terms of wanting to do this particular figure. And the Uriel Poof is nice because he's never been single carded. He was part of the Jedi High Council set. So be on the lookout for those. And we have some Q&A, questions and answers from the 18th week of the
Q&A. Well, it's technically not the 18th week, but it's the 18th Q&A.
18th Q&A is a good way to go with it.
Right. They've taken some weeks off. So here are some questions that I thought were interesting and the answers. Question, will the vintage Rebel transport vehicle ever be redone for the modern line? I thought this answer was interesting. It's doubtful, but not out of the question. It suffers from not being a, in quotes now, heroic fighting vehicle. So it's lower in the priority scale for us. This is the ship that basically saves the Alliance as they flee.
What? Are they talking about the actual transport, or are they talking about the one that rolls on the wheels, that the bad one with the Jawa sounds?
See, now I'm assuming that it's the Rebel transport that you see leaving Hoth.
When you started talking about it, that's the one I thought was the gray one that rolled and had the two compartments in the front and the parts where you could stick the figures on the side.
I don't remember that.
Horrible.
It was on wheels?
Yeah, and it just rolled. It was something, you know, it just so you could put your figures in something, I guess. But it had bad Jawa sounds and... Speaking of bad Jawa sounds.
At any rate, that's the answer. No, it's not heroic enough. Another question. Aside from the monetary issue, why is tape used to seal the 3 3/4 figures to the card backs for the Revenge of the Sith and Saga Collection lines? Will tape be used for the 30th anniversary line? You do realize that a chunk of your market is made up of collectors that don't open their figures, and tape sealed figures will not do well in posterity. Okay. The question has, tape is the only option to seal blisters that wrap around from the front of the package to the back. The aesthetic that we were going for in the Saga Collection. The 2007 basic figure line, these 30th anniversary figures, will be heat sealed to the front of the blister card like the original Trilogy Collection blisters. The comic packs will continue to be sealed with tape around the back of the card. I actually like that. I'm glad that they're going back to the heat sealed cards. I kind of got used to the tape, but it did bug me. I understand the reason for doing it, but I never would have designed the card in the bubble to go that way anyway. Early catalog images of the capture of Tantive IV battle pack appeared earlier this week. The question is, collectors are already asking about the Stormtroopers. Are they based on the vintage original trilogy collection sculpt or the evolution sculpt or something else entirely? The answer, the figure is, and we actually covered this before, but it's confirmed, the figure is the evolution Stormtrooper sculpt. The troopers will be clean. The dirty ones are an error at the factory that we are working to correct. As a result, this one will be delayed relative to the other two national battle packs, Dagobah and Geonosis, but should catch up in the schedule quickly. These packs will be available throughout the spring of 2007, so you should be able to pick up one or more of those without a problem. Comment?
I just find it very humorous that there was a factory error that made them dirty. Were they dragged across the floor? were there bugs that were getting into the manufacturing? That just intrigues me.
It is kind of interesting, isn't it? The Hunt for Grievous Battle Pack was a very innovative use of head swaps and customizing to make the Heavy Gunner action figure. Are we going to see this figure reissued given its current rarity anytime soon? His gun accessory would be awesome to get in a carded figure. Answer, perhaps in the future, greatest hits lines or battle packs, but no plans right now. Since he didn't advance beyond round 64 in the Fans' Choice polls, he won't be on our priority list to bring back right away. So yeah. There you go, folks. If you didn't get out there and vote for that particular figure, you lost out. So, next question. We know that all good things must one day come to an end. That being said, what is the one dream project that the Star Wars team at Hasbro would love to see happen before the line finally ends? Please say Death Star playset. The answer, well, the better dream project would be eventually to see all of the vintage Kenner figures updated in the vintage line. There are a lot of figures to go still, and some of them get pretty obscure, and various challenges exist. Item priorities, product differentiation, drop off of character importance, before we can say for certain that we'll get to all of them. But like you say, it's a nice dream to have. So there you go, those of you wanting to replace all of your vintage figures with the new versions. Another question, the Battle of Naboo wave is just starting to show up at retail now, and there are 22 more figures slated for the Saga Collection and less than 2 months to go before the new year. Are these slated for release in 2006, or is the plan to have them released in 2007 and lap over the start of the 30th anniversary collection? The answer is these last two 22 Saga figures will stretch out from roughly the first week of December through March 24th, when the 2007 Greatest Hits wave should start to feed into the pipeline. If all goes according to plan, these will have ample time at retail for collectors to get them and will not suffer the same short window fate as prior basic figure waves. And then this question, I don't know if this has been brought out before. It may have, but how many comic book 2-packs are planned for 2007? And can you tell us what arcs they cover? The answer, 15 packs. 15 packs slotted into the lineup next year, with a possible early ship against the 2008 line, bringing in one more wave before the end of 07. Now, we don't want to be too specific on the story arcs, but it covers some of the greatest Dark Horse stories, with the occasional Marvel reprint from both movie period and beyond. So 15, that's 30 figures right there. So that's a lot to look forward to.
That's a lot of EU characters.
Absolutely. Question, will the final 22 Saga collection figures be available in Canada? Well, you Canada collectors, listen up. Hasbro says we're looking at that right now. Most will come in with the Walmart exclusive wave, but all may not be available. But we are working with the Canadian team on a way to make sure collectors have a chance to get them all between now and spring, so stay tuned. So there you have it. Those are your questions for this week's Q&A, the 18th Q&A. Just some other tidbits here on the Hasbro vein. If you've picked up your Endor Trooper, and this is the African-American style version, there are apparently four different paint application variations.
Ugh.
Yeah. So you want to check out rebelscum.com. We'll have a link there so you can check those out. It's kind of tough to describe because they're camouflage pants, and the question is the different shades of green and where it's located on the pants. And so anyway, Variation Hunters, good luck with that one. Also, Toys R Us shoppers, beware. New SKUs have been found in the computer. These are interesting. There's a SKU for a 3 3/4 scale Bantha with Tusken Raider. So that's a re-release of the Power of the Force 2 Beast pack. And those were like the Mega Beasts, Ultra Beasts. I can't remember what they were, but it was like Super Beast or something like that. And I, you know, I've been archiving my collection recently, and so I that was kind of fun to unpack those, the Rancor and the Bantha. So that's going to be available if you missed it. I know that's one that you missed out on, so you might want to check that out. $44.99 retail is what it's supposed to be. And then there's a Star Wars Expanded Universe SKU. So those are obviously, I would imagine those are the 2-packs, $10.99 retail, and then the Star Wars Vintage Collection SKU, $9.99 retail. So. And also, just to keep in mind, it seems that the Toys R Us warehouse is almost out of stock on the exclusive Dagobah X-Wing, which I have you to thank. I don't have to worry about picking that up. That was a birthday present from my good buddy Pete. And the Endor AT-AT. So if you haven't picked up either one of these, apparently the Toys R Us warehouse is completely out. So if you see them on the shelves, that would be your one and opportunity. And I definitely need to pick up that AT-AT. And Target, have they gone discount crazy? Well, either the cost on these things is $1.47 a case, or they've sworn off making a profit. Target has once again lowered the price of their exclusive Unleashed figures. Pete, it's not looking good, buddy.
Taps again plays in the background.
Collectors who thought the already discounted price of $9.99 was simply too much will be happy to know that they are now a thrifty $4.94. So there's a picture of a receipt at rebelscum.com for someone who lucked out there. Also, Mexico collectors. Collectors in Mexico, be on the lookout for the aforementioned Dagobah X-Wing exclusive, as they're apparently being found with an R2 figure. So I mean, I think the story was that was the intention at the time, but they went ahead with... I don't know if it was the Dragon Snake that kind of pushed the R2 figure out or what it was. They just, one of those decisions that was made to not include that in the U.S. version. But apparently they're being shown in Mexico with the R2. They're being found anyway. So that's your Hasbro news. Let's see what Pete has in store with Sideshow.
Well, as this show goes live, you should be preparing, if you are a Sideshow collector, for the priority pre-order of Asajj Ventress. That's right, the first offering of the EU Asajj Ventress is going to pop up. Wait, it's not the first offering, is it?
What, the first EU offering?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or was it Snowbody Padme?
Well, they haven't had an order for Snowbody Padme yet.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So there you go. The first EU character offering from the Sideshow 1/6 scale line will be available for pre-order on Friday, so make sure you're tuning in for that, because if you miss it, you're going to miss it.
Yeah, no doubt. Take it from me. I know. This show goes live on Friday mornings, so that means it's today, folks. If you're listening to this show, you better be on the lookout. Now, that's 1 o'clock Eastern time, 10 o'clock Pacific.
Correct. And hopefully you've already signed up for the newsletter so you can get in on these priority pre-orders. But again, this is a pretty cool offering. And check out Rebel Scum or Sideshow's own website to see photos of Asajj and all her Sith glory.
Now, it's not too late to jump in on the newsletter subscription, is it, in order to be qualified for this?
It will be as the show goes live.
Oh,
as we
right.
are sitting right now, it is not. But as the show goes live on Friday morning, it will have been too late. Also, Sideshow is offering a VCD Clone Trooper, which you can hop on their website and check out. And also the Shakti Character Key is also going to be available for pre-order. So check out those special items if you're into those things. And make sure you check out Sideshow Radio if you don't already. They do usually have some pretty good Star Wars updates. And this past week, they did have the winner of their Skywalker Wine Contest. Don't want to give it away, so check out Sideshow Radio so you can hear exactly who has the best Sideshow Skywalker wine.
And for you LEGO collectors, we have some news this week. You can check out RebelScum.com for some boxed images of the new sets that are due early next year. But these are expected just before Christmas, if LEGO can maintain their inventory and getting these things to retail. We had a story a couple weeks back where there's some restructuring going on at LEGO Corp and are not exactly sure what that means for the collector, other than there's going to be maybe a shortage. Well, Star Wars Shop has some good news for LEGO collectors. If you're hoping to find that LEGO sail barge in time for the holidays, or having trouble locating the Toys R Us exclusive LEGO X-Wing, or maybe the Slave One, no worries. Star Wars Shop has them all. So go ahead and check those out and pick them up if you can't find them elsewhere. Again, that's at StarWarsShop.com.
And just a quick update for those of you who are purchasing things in Canada. You can check out London Drugs as they have a sale on their Master Replicas FX lightsabers. If you have a London Drugs, stop by as quickly as you can because they are on sale for $100 Canadian. And you can also pick up their LEGO stock, which is 20% off. So stop by your local London Drugs to see the best in Star Wars sales.
It's very strange to me. You know, like, you know, you're picking up your Neosporin and, oh, by the way, that impulse item of that $100 Master Replica saber.
Yeah, they have them right by the cash register, so you look and go, you know, I could use one of those.
And some Gentle Giant news. We've got some news on the Clone Wars bust-ups. You can take a look at some great photos over at RebelScum.com for the Clone Wars wave and the characters that make up that particular line, including Yoda, Obi-Wan Kenobi in his clone trooper armor, Snow Bunny Padme, Captain Fordo, an ARC trooper, a clone trooper, General Grievous, and Anakin Skywalker. Now, there are some variations. Of course, it wouldn't be a bust-ups wave if there weren't variations. These variants include the troopers and a different colored Grievous and an Anakin in a smoky, translucent plastic finish. Now, this is his look as he sported in the second season of the Clone Wars animated series when he went into the cave or went into that, I don't even know what it was.
The factory.
The factory, that's right. Yeah.
But.
And also there are some photos, again, we've talked about this before, of the Bounty Hunters box set, which is decorated to look like the Bridge of the Executor. So check that out. Also, a shot of the complete Cantina band members bust-ups from that box set. And if you go over to RebelScum.com, you'll see that there's a new poll about which character would you most like to see as an animated maquette, Mace Windu or Kit Fisto. Now, if you remember from last week, we asked the question, which would you rather see as far as an animated Clone Wars maquette from General Giant, Darth Sidious or Chancellor Palpatine? Overwhelmingly, you voted, and the vote was 79 to 20
percent, 79 pulling for Darth Sidious, and only 20% pulling for a Chancellor Palpatine.
Where's that missing 1%?
That's a good question.
It's the give or take 1%.
Right. So if you've got something to say about whether you'd like to see Mace Windu or Kit Fisto, check it out. That's the new probe droid over at rebelscum.com. And as always, we have some just kind of miscellaneous potpourri type
love the miscellaneous
items in collectibles this week. The Momokos are back. My Momoko with a stormtrooper. That's right. The Star Wars USB flash drives have been expanded to include the stormtrooper. The limited edition storage device of only 2,500 comes preloaded with exclusive content from the films in 1 gigabyte, 2 gigabyte, and 4 gigabyte sizes. We did have an email last week saying, you announced this about the Chewbacca. I can't find the 4 gigabyte. I only read what press releases I get. I haven't really shopped for this, so I don't know. Maybe it was a misprint. Maybe there aren't 4 gigs, but there was actually somebody that was looking for this. So if you've heard where you can pick up the 4 gigabyte Chewbacca, we have a listener that would love to know. You can email us at podcast@theforce.net. And also, we've got an update for your endangered species list. Now, we just mentioned that you might have some hard time finding the some of the logo. You might have a hard time finding some of the Lego sets this year because of the problems with Lego Corp. So Star Wars Shop has posted a list of items that could run out at any moment and will not be restocked. So you might want to check those out. Some of those include the Covert Ops action figure, Clone Wars Barriss Offee and Luminara maquettes, the Shock Trooper, I can't say that, Kodo Bukia, I think that's right. I don't know. The Shock Trooper and other select items. Check it out at StarWarsShop.com. So you want to make sure that you get them while you can. And that's going to do it for collecting this week. Let's see what's going on in the world of Star Wars gaming.
All the classic battles.
Delta Squad, execute door breach.
Any way you want.
We have all but destroyed the Jedi Knights.
Fight as a Jedi.
The Old Republic is crippled.
Fight in space.
Darth 3PO?
LucasArts and Sony Online Entertainment announced that Star Wars Galaxies, the complete online adventures, is available for retail in stores at the price of $29.99. Now, the complete online adventures include the base game, Star Wars Galaxies and Empire Divided, along with all three of the game's expansions, Jump to Lightspeed, Rage of the Wookiees, and Trials of Obi-Wan. In addition, the compilation features a special bonus DVD packed with premium content, including a slideshow of Star Wars Galaxies art, interviews with Star Wars Galaxies production staff, in-game movie featurettes produced by Star Wars Galaxies fans, cinematic trailers, and a demo of the popular PC game Star Wars Empire at War. In addition, Star Wars Galaxies subscribers will automatically receive a series of game updates that are scheduled to be released by LucasArts and Sony Online Entertainment throughout the remainder of 2006 and into 2007, filled with new gameplay enhancements. Now, the ultimate addition to this is players who install the complete online adventures will receive an exclusive in-game item, a personal AT-RT vehicle. Now, one per account, but this is the one that was seen in Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, so you don't even have to go out there and earn your money to get this vehicle. Bam, for putting down $29.99 for the whole game, the complete online adventures, you can pick up your very own AT-RT.
Well, that's going to make some people really happy, and other people not so much.
And also, the Star Wars Miniatures game has released its official press release regarding the new launch of the Starship Battles game. Now, you can begin to find these in stores nationwide November 24th, 2006. The starter set is available at a suggested retail price of $40, and booster packs, which will include 7 miniatures, will be available for $21.99. Now, this Star Wars Miniatures Starship Battles set is based on the Star Wars Miniatures game, but it's all revolving around the vehicles and having an actual starship battle in your very own living room.
I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father, before the dark times, before the Empire.
Always in motion is the future, beyond the outer rim.
Master Voss has moved his troops to Bos Pity.
Not a whole lot of release news this week in the expanded universe. You'll have to wait another week for the conclusion of the Flashpoint storyline, but you can catch up with Knights of the Old Republic Commencement trade paperback on sale earlier this week. The trade paperback reprints issues 0 through 6 of the new Star Wars series, Knights of the Old Republic. You can check out an online preview at rebelscum.com and the Jedi Journals. And we'll continue this week with part 2 of our good buddy, Jay Shepard, Jay Shepard, Jay Shepard's intro to the EU. Enjoy.
In the last segment, I provided an introduction to the expanded universe terms and eras. You heard things like canon, apocrypha, and retcon. In this segment, I'll be sure to delve a little deeper into some explanations of terms as well as walk you through the first era. So if you recall, in the last segment, I read an excerpt from Sue Rustoni and Alan Kausch that describes canon as everything that, quote, includes the screenplays, the films, the radio dramas, and the novelizations. These works spin out of George Lucas's original stories, and the rest are written by other writers, end quote. But just how does Lucas Licensing maintain all of that data and keep track of continuity for the GFFA? Simple. The holocron. In the EU, a holocron is a Jedi, or Sith device, used to pass information on from masters to students, often many generations apart. Basically, an interactive encyclopedia for Force users. At Lucasfilm, they too have a holocron. Their holocron is an internal database maintained by Lucas Licensing for the express purpose of trying to maintain continuity within all licensed products. Leland Chi, aka Tasty Taste, is the keeper of this database and maintains 4 different levels of canonical information. G-level canon is absolute canon. This level comes from the mind of George Lucas himself. It includes the films, screenplays, radio adaptations, and novelizations based on the films, as well as any notes presented by Lucas. C-level canon, or continuity, refers to pretty much every piece of EU work available. S-level canon, or secondary canon, refers to the older materials that were published without the eye for continuity that we see in current publications. Finally, there is N-level canon, or non-continuity canon. This includes any blatant contradictions which are handled on a case-by-case basis. N-level, according to Mr. Chi, is rarely used. So, hopefully this will help you appreciate what Lucasfilm does to aid with the continuity of their publications. Bear this in mind as we discuss issues that arise in the various eras. And without further ado, let's get into the first of the 6 Star Wars eras, the Old Republic era. For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic. And with that quote, the breadth of the Old Republic era was set. From 25,000 years before to 1,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, this era has been most fruitfully explored through the comics. Starting with the earliest chronological stories, we find Tales of the Jedi, The Golden Age of the Sith, and The Fall of the Sith Empire by Kevin J. Anderson, Dario Carrasco Jr., and Mark G. Hike. The next chronological series is Tales of the Jedi, which was the first series published and just called Tales of the Jedi, but later took on the name Knights of the Old Republic, by Tom Veitch, Chris Gossett with Mike Barrero, Janine Johnson, and David Roach. Then The Freedan Nad Uprising by Tom Veitch, Tony Akins, and Dennis Rodier. Dark Lords of the Sith by Tom Veitch with Kevin Anderson, Chris Gossett with Mike Barrero and Jordy Ensign. The Sith War by Kevin J. Anderson, Dario Carrasco Jr. and Jordy Ensign. And finally, Redemption by Kevin J. Anderson and Chris Gossett. These 7 series give readers the history of the Jedi and the Sith, the fledgling Republic, the beginnings of the Mandalorians, and sets the stage for events that will resonate thousands of years later during the New Republic era. Besides the historical aspects of the series, readers get to focus on Gav and Jori Darragon as they get involved with the Sith Empire and face new challenges far from home. Nomi Sunrider and Ulic Kildroma are the focus of later Tales of the Jedi series, as their stories lead readers through the galactic upheavals of the Sith Return, Exar Kun's turn to the dark side, and its impact on the numerous ancient Jedi. About 22 years after the Tales of the Jedi series comes the Knights of the Old Republic series. This is one of the 4 current comic series in publication from Dark Horse. This series follows a fugitive Padawan, Zane Carrick, who is presumed by his masters and the Republic to have murdered his fellow Padawans on the planet of Terrace. 8 years after that come the LucasArts video games Knights of the Old Republic and Knights of the Old Republic 2, The Sith Lords, which players are introduced to characters such as Darth Revan, Darth Malak, and Darth Nihilus, and explore the ranks of Jedis and Sith during these ancient times. And finally, based on a snippet of information from the Phantom Menace novelization and a line of Palpatine's dialogue from Attack of the Clones, came the reorganization of the Republic. The character of Darth Bane and his rule of two Sith Lords was invented for the Phantom Menace novelization from conversations that Terry Brooks had with Lucas. The problem with this is that multiple Sith Lords had been allowed to coexist in the Tales of the Jedi series. Then, in AOTC, when Palpatine mentions that the Republic had been around for 1,000 years, not 1,000 generations as Kenobi had first dictated back in New Hope, this caused a little problem with the continuity of the EU. So, writers hauled out their handy-dandy retcon and proceeded to get to work. Here's what they did. The Battle of Rusan was created, in which armies of the Sith and Jedi fought on the fields of Rusan to utterly destroy each other. Only Darth Bane was to survive, and he chose to reinvent the Sith Order with the Rule of Two, whereby there is always a Sith Master and an Apprentice. These stories are told in the recent and first Old Republic novel, Darth Bane, Path of Destruction by Drew Karpyshyn, and the 6-issue comic series Jedi vs. Sith by Darko McCann, Ramon F. Box, and Raul Fernandez. Now, these are not the only things happening during this era, just the most prominent story-based tales. You can find out about other items of interest during this era by reading The New Essential Chronology by Daniel Wallace and Kevin J. Anderson, or by visiting any number of online fan-based timelines such as JMM's Star Wars Chronology or the TFN's Time Tales, to name a couple. Be sure to check out our show notes for more information on the Old Republic era and the terms discussed today. Be sure to listen in for future segments where I will continue to give you an introduction to the remaining eras and keep you updated on the current happenings in that galaxy far, far away.
So there you go, your part two of Jay Shepard's introduction to the EU, and I'm finding these very beneficial for myself as well.
There's a lot of great information that Jay has covered, and as we go on in the weeks, you'll see more things that come out of there that you may not have seen before. Jay and I have talked about it a little bit, and he kind of gave me some previews on what he was going to talk about, and there's some really cool stuff that came out of the EU that you will find interesting as you go along. So keep tuning in for that.
No doubt about it. And speaking of the EU, of course, we have this week's EU Character of the Week.
We talk about Darth Bane this week. Now, again, huge spoiler alert here. Hopefully the interview with Drew Karpyshyn has gotten your appetite wet to get out there and read that book. And tune this out if you are planning on going to read it, because this is basically a rundown of the story. But I do encourage you to go out and read that book. It's a quick read. I ran through it pretty quickly in just a few days, and I am an extraordinarily slow reader, but I really enjoyed the way that Drew had wrote it, and it's a really good story as well. So go out there, check that out. But if you have read it, or if you're just looking for a quick fix, here you go.
And we'll see you on the other side.
Bane was born on the mining planet Apatos with the name Dessel. His father was a bitter, hardened Cortosis miner whose debt to the Outer Rim ore works would keep him working for them for the rest of his, and likely Dessel's, lives. His father blamed him for his horrible lot, as well as the death of his wife, who died during childbirth. During his many drunken nights, he would abuse Dessel and refer to him as the bane of his existence. The nickname followed him as he began working in the Cortosis mines at age 13. As he became more self-sufficient, Dessel's father became even more resentful of him, and the beatings became even more violent. After a particularly brutal encounter one evening, Dess reached out through the Force with his rage and willed his father to die. He did not know it, but this was his first encounter with the Force and the Dark Side.
You don't know the power of the Dark Side.
He continued to work in the mines to try and pay the debts of he and his father. The Sith War had erupted and swept through the other parts of the galaxy, but most on Apatos remained out of reach. Dess did not care about the war, but was thrust into it through some unfortunate circumstances. A game of Sabacc at the local bar turned ugly as Dess showed up some Republic soldiers there on a supply run. After the initial fight was broken up,
sorry about the mess,
the soldiers tried to jump Dess on his way home, and he killed an ensign. He returned to the bar, where his friend offered him the option of joining the Sith to escape the planet. Knowing what waited if he stayed, he took the offer. He joined the Army of Darkness and became a sergeant in an elite unit known as the Gloomwalkers. They were known throughout the galaxy because of their uncanny ability for survival. Dess was a smarter leader than his superior, but allowed him to take credit for many of their victories. When he was given an order that didn't make sense, he disobeyed, and although ultimately correct, was set for court-martial.
Order!
Before his hearing, a cloaked figure came and offered him the chance to train as a Sith Lord. Des accepted the offer and was taken to the Sith Academy on Korriban. He severed ties to his old life and took the Sith name Bane.
I am Sith.
He anxiously began his training, but realized that he was behind the other students, as they had been identified earlier in life. But he got extra attention from the Masters and spent his spare time in the Sith archives. He began to feel that he was falling behind and rashly challenged the top student, a Zabrak named Sirik. Bane was badly beaten and retreated back to the archives as he was no longer allowed to train. Bane was given a second chance when the female student Githany arrived and took an interest in his potential. She began passing on the lessons that she was getting, and he began to grow more powerful than before.
More powerful than you can possibly imagine.
He sought additional training from the Swordmaster Kasim to supplement Githany's lessons. He stepped back into the duel ring against Sirak, and this time easily bested him. Kasim gave him the lightsaber of his former master.
You have been well trained, my young apprentice.
But Bane had already decided that the Brotherhood of Darkness was misguided, and he would seek his own path. He left the academy and went into the Valley of the Dark Lords to find the lost Sith knowledge. Bane came to the conclusion that the Brotherhood was flawed. Lord Khan placed the greater good of the Order over the dark side as a whole. Many of the Sith Lords were weaker than Bane himself, and yet they carry the title regardless. Bane also learned that Khan himself forbade any Sith from taking the Darth title, as he held that, and that alone, responsible for the infighting and jealousy that nearly destroyed the Sith thousands of years ago. He returned from the Valley without any additional knowledge, but a clear view of his path. He learned that the other students were being sent to reinforce the Brotherhood on Rusan. Githany asked him to meet in the archives, but set a trap with the help of Sirak.
It's a trap!
Bane slew Sirak and his two lackeys, but spared Githany. He told her of his path and took the headmaster's ship and went to the lost world of Lehan. He arrived on Lehan and found a Sith holocron which contained the wisdom of Darth Revan. Kasim was sent by Lord Khan to bring Bane back or kill him. Bane was not going back to rejoin the Brotherhood, so he was forced to kill his former master. Now going by the title of Darth Bane, he plotted to destroy the Sith to invoke the rule of two. One to embody the power, the other to crave it.
A master and an apprentice.
He sent Khan the ancient technology of the Thought Bomb, which he knew Khan would not resist using, as a peace offer. Khan sent Githany to kill Bane, and she tricked him into kissing him with poison on her lips. Bane was arrogant and thought he knew the plan, but did not realize that Githany had put additional poison on her lips that he could not detect. He became very ill and was on the verge of death, but sustained himself by giving in to the dark side.
Take your weapon. Strike me down with all of your hatred, and your journey towards the dark side will be complete.
He tracked down a local healer and threatened his daughter to force him to help. Bane went to Rusan to enact his plan to destroy the Brotherhood.
Wipe them out. All of them.
He demonstrated his full power, leading the Brotherhood to a victory over the Jedi. When Jedi reinforcements arrived, Khan unleashed the Thought Bomb in desperation. The Brotherhood and many Jedi were destroyed. However, Bane escaped. On his way off-planet, he met the child Rein. He could feel her potential in the Force, but questioned her commitment and told her that if she wished to become his apprentice, she would need to make it to meet him on Onderon. Bane went to Onderon, where the ghostly spirit of his former mentor, Lord Cortis, chided him for abandoning the Brotherhood. Bane insisted that he was only furthering the Sith cause, but Cortis' spirit created a malfunction in the starship controls, and Bane plummeted down into the forest of the beast-infested moon of Dune. The spirit of Lord Khan appeared to him, offering help. Though in life they had loathed one another, Bane followed Khan and eventually found himself at the ruined crypt of Freedon Nadd's tomb. He could feel the dark side in the tomb and knew he would find what he was looking for here.
The knowledge you seek is very powerful.
Khan led him to a Sith holocron, where he was attacked by barnacle-like creatures called Orbalisks. They attached themselves to Bane's body, causing tremendous pain as they became a part of him. After spending days studying the holocron, Bane exited the tomb with a new vision. Not only would there be just two lords at a time, but the armies and minions the Sith had once relied upon would be done away with as well. Slowly and in secrecy, the Sith would erode the Galactic Republic until the time was right for them to reveal themselves to the Jedi once more.
At last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
Eventually, Bane inducted his new apprentice, giving her the name of Darth Zana, and set his new order in motion. Future Sith Lords were taught the virtues of patience, planning, and secrecy, and each was to take on the title of Darth, a tradition that dated back to before the Jedi Civil War. It wasn't long after that the fledgling order was rediscovered by the Jedi, and once again thought eliminated. The Jedi discovered both the new rule of two and the identity of Darth Bane, but did not foresee that the new Sith he had founded would long survive Bane's death.
Everything is proceeding as I have foreseen.
You can read about Bane's journey to the dark side in Darth Bane, Path of Destruction, Jedi vs. Sith, and Bane of the Sith. He's also mentioned in the novelizations for The Phantom Menace, Revenge of the Sith, as well as the follow-up, Dark Lord, The Rise of Darth Vader. You can also see him appear as a ghost in Star Wars Legacy, Broken.
Excellent.
There you go.
So there's your EU character for this week. Any hints about next week?
Well, you'll just have to tune in to find out, because I don't want to give away what Jay's going to talk about next week. So it'll have something to do with that.
You know what? Technically, next week,
we won't be here.
Well, we will and we won't.
We will and we won't.
We've got something special planned for you next week. It won't be the typical Force cast, but I think you'll be happy with what we do. So we'll have more details coming up at the end of this week's show about that. But that's your EU for this week.
Play back the entire message.
What message?
Message after the message.
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him.
It's a trick. Send no reply.
And we've got some Star Wars tales for you. I'll go ahead and jump in with the first one, if that's all right. This comes from Lewis. Lewis says, I was born in 1982, and for this reason, I did not see the original release, but I grew up watching it at the very least once a month. Well, that meant I was a huge fan for my whole life. When I eventually met my wife, who was a Japanese exchange student, I found out that she didn't know Star Wars outside of it being a phenomenon in the U.S. So I showed it to her for the first time. Her English at that time required that I explain everything in the film, but even still, she loved them. As we dated, she wanted to watch them again and again. That's when you know you got a good woman. She very quickly realized how influential Star Wars was in my life. When we got married, she let me use Star Wars music instead of traditional wedding music. Secretly, she thought it was better music anyhow. Instead of ending the wedding with the same old music at all weddings, we ended our wedding with the throne room end title music from Episode 4. All my friends cheered when the music piped up because they're also Star Wars fans. We also had Princess Leia and Han Solo as our cake toppers, which my grandma thought was simply, quote, not classy. But neither of us cared, because these things were expressions of ourselves. It was awesome and fitting because I had done something just as amazing as Luke or Han had ever done. I had scored a beautiful woman who accepts and loves my personality and interest and shares them with me. Later, when we moved to Japan, my wife let my first purchase of anything entertainment related be the original trilogy, because I had left all my movies in the States since the region codes wouldn't work in Japan. Thanks for the amazing podcast, and may the Force be with you always. P.S. She even let me grow a beard so I could pay homage to Obi-Wan for a while. He's tied for my favorite with Han. Thank you, Lewis, and congratulations. I don't know how long you've been married, but you're a pretty young guy, so I would imagine that you're a somewhat newlywed. So congratulations on that, and may the Force be with you both. That's like that. I like hearing about those wives, those good wives.
I'm pretty sure that my grandmother as well would think that that would not be classy. But needless to say, I'm going to do it anyway. So,
well, what's classy about the nondescript Barbie and Ken on the top of every other wedding cake?
Touché. My Star Wars tale comes from Mark, and he says, my Star Wars tale was a few years ago when I took my son Michael to the Wizard World Chicago Comic Con. We waited in line to have Ray Park sign autographs, which we were supposed to pay for. Well, we didn't get in because there was only an allotted time, so my son was a bit disappointed. When we went to get lunch, who did we see walking towards us but Ray Park? So my son ran over to him. He had on his Darth Maul shirt and sandals. Ray stopped and said hello and spent time talking to him. I had my camera going and videotaped him as we chatted. He asked if my son had a picture of him. We said no, so Ray asked one of his people for a picture and signed it to my son. My son was so happy. He still has the pic on his bedroom wall. My son is now 10 and still wants me to play the video so he can watch it over and over again. I think that was a good day for him. Figured I'd share that story with you. Keep up the great work, and I'll be listening. That is a great story, and it, Ray Park stories do pop up a lot because he really enjoys going out and interacting with the fans and just enjoying the good time. You know,
he goes the extra mile, clearly.
Yes.
From what we understand. I mean, we get as many good Ray Park stories as we do Jeremy Bullock stories. And those are just two guys that are just true blue kind of guys. And they really give back to the fans. And that's it for Star Wars Tales this week, although we do have some just regular listener email. I had put out the call to our listeners, if you're reading the Legacy series, send me your comments. I'd like to know what you're thinking, because this is a series that I've been reading lately. And this comes from Kevin in Wisconsin. Kevin says, "You asked for Legacy reviews. Well, here's mine. I think it's great. I've never read Star Wars comics before, so it's nice to be able to start a series like this without wondering who everyone is. I really liked Issue Zero with all the history and details. To me, the entire premise of the Sith abandoning the only two rule, the Imperials raising again, and the Jedi being hunted makes sense. I like that the Imperials use the Force to have loyal Imperial Knights. Cade Skywalker is the opposite of Anakin and Luke, as he is trying to avoid getting involved, and all the other characters are interesting, and I can't wait for the interaction in battles. I'm trying to be vague about everything in case anyone is just getting the issues, but I recommend Legacy. And thanks for putting out a great podcast. I realized what makes yours the best. The positive attitude. Some, quote, fans do nothing but complain about anything new and can get so negative. You can tell if they like Star Wars. You both can debate something but still keep it in perspective instead of saying something sucks. Thanks for all your time and effort, Kevin." Well, thank you for recognizing that, Kevin. It's something that I don't think we consciously do. It's just we love Star Wars, and to me, any product is better than no product, right?
Absolutely.
Every day is a good day when you're a Star Wars fan. What do you got for us?
I have.
Pete's having some issues with his computer. That's what he's having.
That's just so much fun. Every time I go to read something, it's like, ah. My mail comes from Carmelo. It says, "I've been listening to you guys for a month now, and I'm absolutely loving your work, and keep it up. You guys have absolutely rekindled my love for Star Wars. Don't get me wrong, I've always been a big lover of Star Wars, but since I've been listening to you guys, I have watched the Star Wars saga twice now on DVD, and I've begun reading the X-Wing series again. I love all the books, too. I have even started looking at airfares to LA from Perth, Western Australia, for Celebration 4. I so hope I can afford to go. Have you any advice on overseas fans that want to make it to Celebration 4? Anyway, here's a couple of photos of my very own Star Wars room. My wife doesn't allow me to spread it throughout the house, but I love my little sanctuary. Can't wait for the next podcast." You know, the Star Wars pictures are great, but I'm going to have to look into if there is any information that I can give to fans coming from overseas, because that's one thing that I absolutely loved about Celebration 3 was that there was just a large amount of people coming from not only all over the United States, but all over the world. And I want that to be the same situation in Celebration 4. And Carmelo, if you're there, definitely stop by and find us. You know, we're going to be out and about. We're going to have some stuff going on. So make sure you come track us down and say hi. We're definitely going to want to chat with everybody. So,
well, I have chess set envy in his photos. I've never seen that chess set before. And the chess sets, the Star Wars chess sets that we've had, I always felt were a little weak. But this one is really cool. And so I'm going to email him back and find out where he got that. If he can track down another one for me.
Right. And I will be working on trying to pick up some tips for any of you overseas fans that are looking to come into Celebration 4. So
it's a great idea, and we ought to definitely make that a part of our C4 update in the future for fans coming from outside of the U.S. I've got one more email here regarding the Legacy series. Again, I had asked about some feedback, and this comes from Jill Wagner. I love when we get email from the ladies. And Jill says, "Hey there, I'm a frequent listener to your podcast and heard you guys were asking for thoughts on the Star Wars Legacy series. I admit that I've fallen in absolute love with the series and adore the development that has been progressing so far, even if there have only been 5 issues. I admit, however, that the latest issue has become my favorite. I was so excited to see the developments that came through in this issue, especially regarding Cade. It was so exciting!" Exclamation point. Thanks for asking for the input, Jill Wagner. So, Jill, thank you for that. Again, I'm enjoying it too.
If you haven't gotten into something and you're looking for a jumping off point, again, Legacy is the way to go. There's so much going on, and there's a familiarity there with the characters and the things that are going on, but it's not the same recycled universe. There's a whole new set of things going on, whole new set of chaos, and it's really the way to go.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's kind of, they took a lot of very typical Star Wars devices and ideas and just sort of flipped them, which is a great thing. Do you have another email?
That's it.
I've got one more email from Steve Nixon, also known as the Ginger Prince. He says, Jay and Pete, greeting from the UK Venerable Jedi Masters. I'm writing because all your talk on this week's show about your Star Wars marathon, watching on cable and HD, has got me looking forward to my own marathon. No Cinemax here in Blighty, but numerous members of my family, plus work colleagues, will be visiting my house, officially named Cloud City. See the attached photo, and he actually does. He's got a placard on his flat. Is that right? On his flat, naming it Cloud City. He says, we're going to be watching all six DVDs back-to-back in our second annual Star Wars Marathon on Saturday, November... The European way of doing dates just totally screws me up. So, that's my own ecocentric problem there. On Saturday, November 25th, 2006, timetable for the day has been attached. We'll be watching the prequels first, followed by the original trilogy. I'll be wearing my Obi-Wan costume all day, as featured in the Rebel Scum Halloween costume contest, and would appreciate a mention on the show, as we'll start the day by listening to your podcast. Keep up the magnificent work, chaps, and may the living force be with you always. I like that, the living force. I wrote a blog about that once. Want to hear it? Here it goes.
That's for another show. But here's hoping that your Star Wars marathon goes better than ours did. And I can't believe that there's any way that it could possibly not be better than what ours was. So,
well, you know. Yeah. Good luck to you. And I'm sure you'll be much better off watching the DVDs than, well, otherwise. Well, that's it for this week. Another show.
They go by so fast.
Oh, yes. We want to thank Drew Karpyshyn, our guest in the cantina this week. Thank you, Drew. Hope to have you back soon.
And we'd like to congratulate the first five winners in our top 10 days of giveaways contest.
And they are
Chris Carter of Mount Pearl, Canada, Devin Reed of Riverton, Utah, Mark Scott of Evansville, Indiana, Lynn McInnish of Ozark, Missouri, and our drawing for today.
Reach into the Darth Vader helmet.
It is Harry Dawes of Sherman Oaks, California. So congratulations to all those people. We still have five more days as this show goes live of giveaways that we're going to be doing. So make sure that if you haven't sent us an email, go ahead and send us one with top 10 in the title so you can get in on the contest. And remember, you are only going to hear about it or be involved here. So make sure you're listening to the Forcecast for further updates on that.
You can also check out the forums at rebelscum.com. We've got a thread over there, and it'll have all the details of the winners. But you got to listen to this show. Speaking of emails, send us one. Get your Star Wars tales in. You can email them to podcast@theforce.net. We'll accept them as MP3s if you want to strap a microphone on and send it that way. Or you can give us a call at 330-871-4TFN. Or look for us on Skype at ForceCast. And again, don't forget about those forums over at rebelscum.com. That's going to be it for us this week. We're going to see you next week for a special Thanksgiving special. Wow, that was redundant, wasn't it?
The Department of Redundancy Department.
Right. Be back next week for our special Thanksgiving program. And then we'll see you back here on December 1st. For the Forcecast, I'm Jason.
And I'm Pete.
And remember,
the Force will be with you. Always.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.